Hey everybody, I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Jay Speak. I'm so happy that you're there. Thank you so much for being here and for following me and for giving me likes and all those other cool things that they do in podcasts. I'm just trying my best to try and give you a perspective from a journalistic sense of what's going on in a part of the world that's suddenly really, really important. And I just think that if you guys had to depend on finding out, the world is really changing. I'm going to Shanghai and to Beijing Thursday night, and I want to be there. I mean, Putin's going to be there, Xi's going to be there, Modi's going to be there. The world is freaking changing, and it's about having access to the place and the people who are changing the world. Because if we had to rely on like CNNs and the BBCs and the New York Times to tell us what's going on with the people and the places where the world is actually changing, we would never learn anything. So, I'm glad in my own small way I'm able to provide this voice for you guys and really a listening device to hear people express ideas that you wouldn't be able to hear. You wouldn't be able to hear. Pepe Escobar, for example, he's fascinating. I just finished a conversation with him and I want you to hear this. It's good. So, Israel strikes Nasser Hospital with a missile. By the way, that's a war crime. Then, as people gather in the hospital, you've seen the video. As people, a journalist, 15 people gather to try and help and maybe help some of the victims and journalists who were there to also help victims, but also cover the story. Suddenly, another missile hits them and just incinerates them. Burns them alive with this missile. And I have been on I've been on X and or Twitter throughout the evening describing what I think that is. And I talked with Pepe about this, and he's gonna share his perspectives on it. But it really does look like a double war crime. And it wasn't supposed to be captured live stream for the whole world to see, but it just so happens that it was. And what's gonna happen now as a result of that? By the way, we're also gonna talk about John Bolton. John Bolton, War Hawk or Chicken Hawk? You're going to be surprised by the answer. You may know this. I didn't. I did a little Googling and I did a little research on Mr. Bolton, and I found out that he is not what he preaches. And then, of course, Germany. Trump just came out and said, look, we are not sending US troops as peacekeepers or any other or anything of the sort. So it's going to be up to the Europeans to continue to fund this war that they want to continue to have happen. Why the hell would they do that? Think about this. Germany is broke. Merz, Friedrich Merz, their chancellor, just said, we're broke. We're going into a 3-year recession. There's no way out of this. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. We don't have enough money to do anything. We need to rebuild Germany somehow. And what are they still doing? They're still talking about funding Ukraine. What about your own people? What about your own people? What about funding them? This is so crazy. But you've got to listen to this conversation between Brazilian journalist Pepe Escobar and myself. He's so smart. You learn so much talking to a guy like this. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Here's Pepe Escobar.
Look, Brazilian journalist and columnist at the Cradle, Pepe Escobar, is joining me now to talk about some of these things. He is in Normandy, France. Boy, what a great place to be to talk about some of the things that we're talking about now. In fact, Pepe, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you.
Because you're there, why don't we start with Germany? I think that's a great place to start. What do you make of the fact that they're finance ministers in Ukraine saying, we got a lot of money and we're going to keep giving it to you, while their chancellor saying, we ain't got no money and we're running out quick. Which is it?
I'll give you the headline, Rick. No welfare, only warfare.
Yeah.
That's about
Yeah, no. Doesn't it seem crazy? I mean, the example I just made, I got no money, I can't feed my kids this month, but I'm going to somehow try and go and feed my neighbor's kids because my kids need to go hungry. Shouldn't he be thinking about the German people, damn it?
But that's not the point for the current European political elites. And that applies to all of them, starting with the European Commission in Brussels and the prime ministers and leaders in the individual capitals, Berlin, Rome, Paris, etc. The guiding principle is acute Russophobia. The guiding principle is to paint Putin as the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. And I'm not exaggerating. This is what you get from Western mainstream media in block all across Europe. And the guiding principle is we don't care about the population of our NATO state. We only care about the war in Ukraine until the last Ukrainian. And we'll keep paying for it, which is exactly what was the non-discussion between the head of the European Commission and President Trump, when Trump said, okay, continue with the war as long as you have 5% of GDP, buy our super weapons nonstop, pay us in euros, and then the war is yours.
The United States doesn't even have any of those weapons. What they're giving them is has-been weapons.
Don't.
Right. You know that, right?
So of course they don't. No, because Ukraine is demilitarized, NATO is demilitarized, and the United States is also semi-demilitarized. So to get all those weapons back, it's full tilt production in the U.S. for the next 3 years or so to get to the levels before the SMO, the special military operation in Ukraine. So it's Kafka, if was still alive and he was coming up with the plot of a novel. That's it, in fact.
How does Europe, and I don't know if I ask you this question from the leader's standpoint or from the people's standpoint, but how does Europe allow itself to become a place where the will of the people can be so ignored at their own expense? I was just looking, Pepe, at the favorability ratings of some of these leaders, and it's frightening. I think Macron is at 29%. Starmer's at 23%, dude. 23%. Only 23% of the people of the United Kingdom think Starmer's worth a crap as a leader. 23%. I think this dude Merz is at 35, but he was at 38, so he's actually go down. The best in the bunch is the Italian Prime Minister Meloni. And she's at 42. So I mean, this is if don't they read this stuff? If they read this, wouldn't they think, let me, you know, zig or zag here? I got to change my policy, my plan. No, right?
No, they don't, Rick. And they live in a bubble. And when you see the way they actually went to meet Trump in the Oval Office, and afterwards, as the whole planet knows, they were treated like school kids being reprimanded by the headmaster.
Yeah.
And they still believe that they got something out of it, which is to continue their forever war against Russia. You see how they live in a bubble. And in terms of fake headline that I just gave you, no welfare, more warfare, This is the way they think, actually. And when you have, it's wonderful to have conversations with average Frenchmen, like I had this past few weeks in Brittany or in Normandy, or talk to my Italian friends, and people who don't follow politics on a daily basis. And they say, look, we all know it's wrong, but there's nothing we can do about it. And then a German friend says, look, they're considering Ursula von der Leyen as the next president of Germany. It's not a joke.
Perfect. Perfect. I mean, to me, that makes all the sense in the world, given the past. If past performance is future expectation, then she should be voted in by 100%. Wow. It doesn't surprise me. By the way, you say, here's the $60,000 question, right? Do they do this because someone's paying them to do this? Are they being influenced by some higher source, like in the United States, the Israelis, for example? Or the lobbyists, or the war machine, you know, the contractors, et cetera? Or are they really just that stupid?
It's yes, this is the $6 million question, Rick.
Thank you.
Yes, they are that stupid, because when you look at the mechanism of how the European Union and the European Commission in Brussels and NATO, the whole Brussels universe, we can call it the Brussels matrix, the way it works, you only get to the top positions, like you are a commissioner in Brussels, or you get to the head of the commission, or you go to the Parliament of Europe or the Council of Europe, and then the people want to, okay, now she can become president of something, anything. It's because you fit the mold, and this mold has been refined for the past decade.
Yeah. Of course,
it's an American mold, but it's an Atlanticist mold. It's from the East Coast of the U.S. to all the big capitals, old money, old aristocracy, influence peddlers. For instance, the case of von der Leyen, both families, her family and her husband's family, this is old money in Germany, influencing everything for decades, if not over a century. This is how it works. So these people, there is an iron curtain protecting them from reality, daily life, and especially average European taxpayer who pay, for instance, here in France, just to give an example, people pay an average of over 50% of what they make on all sorts of taxes, which is completely crazy. And the main conversation with anybody in France or in Italy or in Germany for that matter, well, my money disappears at the start of the month. Yes, it does, because it goes all sorts of taxes, direct, indirect, subliminal, underground, you name it. And of course, when the taxpayer said, okay, what about defending our national and regional interests? No, it's Brussels' interests, you know. It comes to the point where you have the average German and Frenchman or Italian, they go to a public building and they see an European Union flag side by side with their national flag, and they are, I cannot say it, they are raging.
Yeah.
Take out this flag from here. These people do not represent us, and they don't.
You feel that. You see it on the streets, huh? I mean, you really do. Those numbers that I just gave, and those are numbers I just recently updated within the last 5 or 6 days, by the way, because numbers are one thing, but when you walk the streets of Paris, I imagine you get a real sense of what the people think. And that's what they think. That's what you sense, right?
Absolutely. And when you get out of the main capitals, Rick, it's fascinating. For instance, this month I'm recharging before going back to Asia. So I went to two top regions in France, Brittany and Normandy. And then you talk to people, fishermen, people in the morning market and all that. It's fascinating. It's better than going to any political science seminar, you know. And then they give you the feeling, the grassroots feeling. For instance, in a few days here in Paris, on September 10th, they're playing a huge demonstration, which is basically against everything.
Huh.
The political system, Macron, you name it, everything. They are fed up. And so this is, I heard this from expats living all across Asia, just to give an idea of the reach, how people are absolutely pissed with everything all across, you know. And in the case of Germany, because the Germans are so passive and they don't have that, I would say, extra political acumen of average Italians or average Frenchmen. But the Germans are starting in their underground channels. They are starting to say, look, there's got to be a revolution here.
Forgive me for asking this question, but I can't help myself. Because you're in France, I'm going to ask you this question. Maybe a little over the top, but what the hell? What are you hearing about the First Lady, Brigitte? Because this story is crazy on the Googles and on the internets ever since Candace, my friend Candace Owens, did this this expose. Everybody's scratching their heads and wondering, do the French know about this, that everyone's talking about their first lady being something other than a first lady?
Rick, this is the number one topic in every bistro and every cafe. And not now. For years.
I feel like I got to take a shower. But go on. I want to hear more.
And the thing, what Candace did is absolutely amazing because this is now a mega topic all across the U.S., which was not until a few months ago. And when the average Frenchman and Frenchwoman, when they learned about that, they said, of course, because this is what we talk about every day here. So the Americans have to talk about it as well. Of course, once again, it's not your question has merit because there are no smoking gun or guns so far proving the thesis about the first lady or not lady. But there is enough evidence that could be dismissed with only one thing, Rick, a DNA test.
That's
all it takes. With one DNA test, everything disappears. They have refused that DNA test over and over again. So there is something extremely fishy about it. And it became, for French people, it became a... Look, they are destroying our republic, these people in the area.
Well, let me ask you this. And this is where the rubber meets the road for me. And I agree with Candace on this. And I'm not going one way or another. But if someone said, Pepe, I think when you were young, you were a woman. And eventually you turned into a man. How long would it take you to be able to refute that with pictures, with your mother, with your father, with your brother, with your sister, with your friends, with some? How long would it take you, Pepe?
For anybody, I would say the same day, Rick.
Yeah.
Literally. In the same few minutes. Yeah. If you have the records, if you have your DNA test, if you have a
pictures.
Photo,
yeah.
It's so easy.
Here's me. Yeah. Here's me in a cheerleading outfit if I was a girl. Here's me playing football when I was a little boy. I mean, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so simple.
Yeah.
But it already proves something that. The overwhelming majority of French people already know that there is something extremely fishy in the Élysée Palace environment and around it.
Let me talk about another one of your favorite people. Your friend, John Bolton, seems to be in a little bit of trouble. Sorry, I had to do that. Zing! It's an interesting dude, man. This guy's a real cat. This guy has... There's not... I said this earlier in my intro... There has never been a country that this guy does not want to attack, save, of course, the, you know, European friendlies. And he has a history of starting wars. He was a part of the people who started, as you know, the Iraq War, along with the rest of them. And then he hates Donald Trump, and suddenly his home is raided. What do you make of this whole situation?
Well... What a character. I interviewed him, Rick, in D.C. years ago at an AIPAC meeting. So you can imagine the scenery, right? And, it was a 20-minute interview or so. I got all the answers that I wanted just by looking at him and the way he expresses himself and the tics and, you know, that hyena look when he talks especially about Palestine and Iran. Mm-hmm. It's frightening when you are face to face with somebody like that, you know. About the dodgy dealings, we still don't know.
Right. Yeah.
None of us know. But for the FBI to do something like this, they must have some solid evidence backing that up. Definitely. And it doesn't surprise me because the people who finance John Bolton, we have a pretty good idea about them, including the MEK, that anti-Tehran organization, which is basically paid by the Israelis and intel agencies from the West.
Hmm.
And a guy like Bolton, who used to have a prominent position, is the perfect mouthpiece for their message, which is essentially the old John McCain message, bomb, 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 Iran, right? In 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
But it's a very character.
At least, in defense of John McCain, and I'm no fan of John McCain because that's another guy who's just crazy war hawk, but at least with John McCain, you could say he was an actual warrior. This guy was a soldier. I mean, this guy went through hell in Vietnam. This other guy, I just found out, and I don't know if you heard me, I did a little Googling, and I found out that not only he was in the National Guard, big deal. That's where people of his generation went to not go to war. And then, as I'm sure you know, he was quoted as saying, I would never have gone to that war. Hell if I'm going to be buried in some rice paddy field.
In Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia, right? Exactly. Just in case you didn't know what he was talking about.
This is as nasty as it gets, isn't it, Rick?
Yeah.
Because everything is encapsulated into what he says. Everybody else is inferior. I'm not going to mingle with barbarians in a swamp in Southeast Asia. I'm very good. I'm too good for all that. Mm. I am above all that. So everything is encapsulated. I would say this is a shorthand for American exceptionalism in its worst aspects.
Agreed. Yeah. Unfortunately, he does rise to that level. Where should we go next? I think let's go Israel. That attack I saw last night in Gaza, to me, I'm not a military expert. I'm not an expert on missiles. But that looked so predetermined, so planned, executed in such a heinous and cruel fashion that they would, A, shoot a missile into a hospital, and then, B, back it up with a second missile when journalists and other rescue workers went there to try and assist those people who are being exterminated. I can't think of anything more mean, more cruel, Pepe. Can you?
No, we can't. As journalists, Rick, we can't. Very, very important for our audience. These are two war crimes in one.
Yeah.
You bomb a hospital, then you bomb health workers and journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens afterwards? Absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. You have that infrahuman specimen you showed the clip saying, we don't do this intentionally. So your unintentionally is always intentionally obvious. And everybody knows that. And you have the numbers, like the numbers that you quote. And these are professional numbers. Yeah. Every day you have an attack against journalists, hospitals, ambulances, health workers, all of them together. Every day, day after day. Because it's... to encapsulate this in only one formulation is very hard. But they did it themselves. They consider everybody else Amalek.
Yeah.
According to their reading of the Torah. So they have to be exterminated, annihilated, harassed, sidelined, or killed.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what they're doing in Gaza and soon in the West Bank. They want to purge the West Bank as well. So it's a death cult. And when you see a death cult posing as a nation state, as a sovereign nation state, attacking all their neighbors and even threatening to attack others, there is a veiled threat by Israel to attack Europe in determined circumstances. We all know about that. So we are all hostages of a death cult. And this is directly linked to the fact that another death cult, ISIS, is being admitted to the United Nations. You know what's going to happen next month. No? The leader of Al-Qaeda, ISIS in Syria, is going to UN. So this is exactly the same thing. So this is the homogenization and normalization of death cults. Yeah. As long as they serve the same master. And we all know who the master is, right?
Wouldn't you think, though, I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up Catholic or something, and my mother taught me to believe in God. But if there is a God in heaven, and he's looking down, and he's seeing these people do this kind of thing, don't you think that there has to be some kind of justice at some point? Sometimes I can't sleep at night thinking about the things that I see in the news. Wars, I understand. I hate them. I wish they would all end. But I understand sometimes when wars occur and there's friction between peoples or nations or communities, this that we're seeing in Gaza is not a war. It's an extermination. It's an annihilation of a mass or a race of people. At least that's how I see it. And I think that's as horrible as anything that can happen. As horrible, in fact, as what happened to the people who are now perpetrating this when the Nazis did it to them.
But history is not about good and evil, Rick. History has its own mechanisms. History is based on facts on the ground. For instance, if we go back to history and we analyze the Roman Empire as a whole, it was basically a killing machine. For all the great things that they gave us, of course, but it was essentially a killing machine. The great conquerors, Genghis Khan, Timur, Attila the Hun, you name it, they were also killing machines. Hmm. And with some, in the case of the Mongols, fascinating because they were also a very enlightened empire. But there were pyramids of skulls all over the place, you know. So what Israel is doing in historical terms is not new. What is new is now that they can conduct a genocide in view of the whole planet. And there are no consequences because they know they can get away with it. I think this, from our point of view as journalists, this is the most frightening aspect. Whatever we do, whatever humanitarian workers do, nothing can, the only thing that would teach something to this death cult would be a military defeat. And we know this is not on the horizon, at least short-term or mid-term, you see?
Yeah.
But impunity is it's a horrible mark on all of us, all over the world.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a journalist, you're a journalist. I've spent my life at this profession, and I don't think I've ever felt as powerless.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we are all powerless. And when I say we, it's the planet. Of course, I'm not talking about the institution. I'm not talking about the United Nations, which is now beyond a joke. I'm talking even about, and I'm going to be very, very blunt. Even the global South, the global majority, they are not being as blunt as they should to say, stop this now or there will be consequences. No, nobody's saying that. Even in the what we know, some leaks of, let's say, more or less secret conversations of the death cult in Tel Aviv with several other governments, there's never a leak that says, look, they got reprimanded really, really, really at the highest level. Mm. No. They didn't. So the sense of impunity is frightening, absolute, especially now where everything can be instantly checked and your fake news reveal itself as fake news, just like you masked the Israeli fake news.
Yeah,
still, nothing happens.
You know, it's the story of the guy or the gal who comes home and finds their spouse in bed with another lover and looks at them and said, how can you possibly do something like this to me? And the spouse in bed with another lover looks at them and says, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? You know, Israel is the spouse in bed with another lover, but they're doing something much, much more heinous, obviously. And they're literally looking at guys like you and me and saying, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?
Exactly.
And it's troubling, man. Final point before we run out of time. I see you all over the place. You're one of the smartest guys out there. And I see you with McGregor and with Daniel Davis and with Napolitano. I love that guy.
The judge.
The judge. Here come the judge. And I think there's this consensus building amongst a lot of really smart geopolitical thinkers and military thinkers as well, that if somebody doesn't stop what's happening in Ukraine, if Europe doesn't wake up and the United States doesn't wake up and Ukraine doesn't wake up and Zelensky doesn't wake up, the Russians are just going to have to continue to run roughshod all through the country because they keep saying, we want to stop. Give us a reason to stop. And nobody seems to want to give them a reason to stop. And short of that, I fear for Ukraine. I fear for that country. I was talking yesterday to a Ukrainian. He was sitting right here on the set, Pepe, with me. And I asked him, and he's a smart dude, man, Maxim. You know Maxim?
No, I never met him. No.
He's a brilliant guy. And when I asked him, I said, look, let's suppose everything finally gets fixed. Will you go back to Ukraine? You're a smart guy. You could be valuable. You could be a real leader in a country like that. And you're fair-minded. And he says to me, nope. I said, why? You love Ukraine. He goes, yep. Why wouldn't you go back? He goes, because that place is going to be a hellhole for a long time. That place is going to be ruined. because and it ain't going to be fixed overnight. You think he's right?
He's right, Rick, because he knows who runs the show in Kyiv, which is not the actor. It's the guys behind the actor. These are very dangerous. These are the guys, oligarchs, of course. Ukraine basically is a small basket of oligarchs, the same ones. And they control Pravi Sector, Azov Battalion, you know, the neo-Nazi, neo-fascist outfits who are behind the actor. The actor is just a messenger. He's a lowly actor and a lowly messenger who now thinks that because he's impersonating a president, he is a president. And that's basically what the Russians have been saying. Okay, we are ready to discuss anything, but it has to be with a legitimate leader. And this guy is completely illegitimate. And he is. According to the Constitution, he is an illegitimate president. And the Rada, the parliament, is also illegitimate. But I think the most, to come back to the U.S., after all, this war is an American war using NATO and Ukraine against Russia. It seems like Witkoff did not understand what Putin told him before Alaska. And it looks like Trump was also misled because Witkoff did not inform him correctly. Because Trump was under the notion that the Russians would agree to peacekeeping forces in Ukraine, which is the same thing as NATO forces in Ukraine.
Right.
And it's everybody, Rick, everybody knows that this is the mega red line for Russia. So we are back to square one again because we have the so-called Trump diplomat that didn't get it.
You know what I would say about Putin? I'd say, okay, you know what? I agree to the peacekeepers. For every one of your peacekeepers, we're going to have one of my peacekeepers. And by the way, your peacekeepers have to be made up of 75% Slovakians and Hungarians. Then I'll agree.
There'll be a solution. Did you see that Kyiv already vetoed the Chinese?
Yeah.
The number one superpower in the world economically.
Right. Yeah.
Already vetoed.
No Frenchies, no Brits, no Germans. Okay, now we can maybe talk about peacekeepers. Pepe, you're the best, man. What a great conversation.
Pleasure talking to you.
No, the pleasure is really all mine. Thanks for the...
Are you going to be Vladivostok?
I am going to be in China this
You're
Thursday.
Going to the SCO in Beijing.
Yeah, I'm going to be going probably to both Shanghai and Beijing. I think that's going to be enormous with Modi.
Enormous.
Modi, you know, and Xi and Putin.
Everybody is going to be there, exactly.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
And Putin and Xi, exactly.
Yeah, I got my invitation. I'm excited about that. Then I'm going to go to Sochi for Voltai and... And then I'm doing I can't even remember. I'm doing a lot of things back there. Ever since I got here.
You're doing an important tour of China, Russia. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, my friend, I'll tell you what a difference between being able to have access and actually talk to the newsmakers from the place in the world where most of the news is being generated, as opposed to sitting in one of our countries in the West and depending on the New York Times and CNN and the BBC to tell us truths that we later find out are so far removed from the truth, I've never seen anything like it. So it's important to do the kind of things that you and I do when we travel and we find out the truths of this
world.
It
is, and there are not many like us, you know, reporting from Russia and China, for instance.
There should be. Yeah, they all go to London, they all go to Paris, they all go to Berlin. Why the hell, you know, the story can be in a different place.
And
anyway.
The big stories are in Russia and China.
They are, yeah, they are. Thank you, Pip. Thank you, Pip. I appreciate
Thank
it, my
so
friend.
Thank you so much.
Keep
my
up.
Pleasure.
Be careful with those Frenchies over there. You know how they are.
No, I'm leaving to Russia this weekend.
Oh, so I'll see you here. Fantastic.
Okay, cheers.
I'll be
bye
in
bye.
China. Bye.
Thank you so much.